Today's Gold Bond rescue mission, itching for a birdie. I'm on the 10th green with Sam.
Hey.
And right now, he's sweating a tricky downhill putt from 9 feet out.
That's tricky because I'm all sticky and itchy.
That's why I'm giving Sam the powder with the power, Gold Bond Body Powder. The encapsulated menthol protects skin, absorbs moisture, and relieves itching.
Now if I miss, it's all on me.
Relax. Gold Bond keeps you cool under pressure.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank Gold Bond. This stuff works.
Guys, urinating frequently, interrupted sleep, intimacy issues? Yes, it could be your prostate. Right now, you can try Prosterix, the gold standard in prostate supplements, for free. Just pay a small shipping and handling fee. The proprietary formula in Prosterix contains more proven ingredients for prostate health than the leading brand. Order your free bottle of Prosterix today. Just call 888-773-0299, 888-773-0299, or visit ptx1.com, ptx1.com.
There's some more selling on Wall Street as we get some less than rosy economic news. Fox Business Network's Dennis Neal's here live.
Stocks were set for a timid rebound, but suddenly turned down on bleak numbers for the U.S. economy. The Dow now down 42 points. ADP job growth numbers come in below expectations. Jobless claims jump higher. And GDP growth for the first quarter reduced to a punk 1.9%. Facebook fallout continues. Stock down. Kayak, travel listings website, delaying its new stock offering. But all is not lost. In the first quarter, U.S. companies racked up their best profit gain in 3 years. And retail sales were perky in May. Dave?
Now, Dennis, oil is dropping some more this morning, more than a dollar, back under 87 bucks a barrel, as gas also goes down a little. AAA's national average for self-serve regular now 362 a gallon. If you're in the market for a car, getting a used one might soon be cheaper.
If you're in need of wheels and have been waiting for a break, look for prices to come down at the used car lot. The NADA, National Auto Dealers Association, predicts the price on many mid-sized and compact cars will likely plunge up to 5% in June. Used car prices have been trending higher. Fallout from the credit crunch, which cut into auto leasing, a key source of late-model used cars. That trend is about to make a U-turn because of the falling price of gas and because of the bump up in new car sales. If you can wait for July, there might even be better prices. Bill Fitka, Fox News Radio.
The Kings, just 3 wins away from hockey's crown.
Here's Kopitar, moving it along! He scores!
Anze Kopitar wins it for Los Angeles in overtime on NBC, beating the New Jersey Devils 2-1 to take Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals. It also took OT for the Heat to beat the Celtics in the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals, 115-111 in Game 2. Miami is now up 2-0. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
AM 1460, WVOX, and WVIP HD4, New Rochelle.
Hello, this is Michael Brown. 31 years ago, my father walked into the New Rochelle Prescription Center on Main Street. Since that day, Pat Patel and his wife have taken fantastic care of my family's medication needs professionally and with great kindness. They delivered medical and nutritional supplements to my parents and took care of all of my father's diabetic and medical equipment needs. That is why I'm talking to you today, to let former Almark and Cherry Lawn Pharmacy customers who are looking for real personal attention from their pharmacist to come visit Mr. and Mrs. Patel at the New Rochelle Prescription Center, 551 Main Street, downtown New Rochelle's last independent pharmacy. They even give flu shots, have a broad selection of over-the-counter items, and take most insurance. Again, that's the New Rochelle Prescription Center, a full-service pharmacy with surgical supplies, at 551 Main Street, or call them at 914-636-2225 and tell Pat Michael Brown sent you. By the way, they now deliver to New Rochelle's North End.
Updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity on this Thursday. It looks like sunshine, highs in the upper 70s, lower 80s. Northwest winds at 5 to 15, gusting to 20 this morning. For tonight, mostly clear. Overnight lows into the upper 50s. Friday's weather's looking mostly sunny. Fine day tomorrow. Middle to upper 70s. At night, it'll be cloudy. Some rain likely after midnight with another weather front approaching. Temperatures down into lower 60s. Some clouds, a little bit of rain in the morning hours on Saturday. Then partly sunny. Chance of an afternoon shower. High temperatures in the upper 70s. Extended outlook calling for Sunday to be quite nice. Mostly sunny. Middle 70s. Monday, partly sunny. High temperatures for the day will range into the lower 70s. There's a chance of some showers on Monday night and also on Tuesday morning. Tuesday, look for temperatures to be cooler, ranging in the upper 60s to near 70. Back to partial sun Wednesday of next week. I'm Eddie Rogers, Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Every day, New Yorkers depend upon the clean and reliable electricity provided by Indian Point. On an average day, Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester at lower cost than other power plants and helps our efforts to improve air quality. You have a right to know the facts about Indian Point, because when talk turns to extending the licenses of these plants, we all need to remember how important Indian Point is to New York. For instance, did you know that without Indian Point's lower cost power, our electric rates would be much higher, and that an equivalent gas-fired power plant would pour millions of tons of pollutants a year into the air we breathe, and that the independent experts in charge of New York's electric grid have said that the city could face rolling blackouts without Indian Point. I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Councilman Barry Fertel, Shiloh Baptist Church, Benny Giles, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
Hello, New York. This is Bill O'Shaughnessy, and this is the spot. This is the place on the radio dial. Welcome once more to your own WVOX, the most influential station in New York State, for you and yours. A labor of love every day, I can tell you, and every night at 1460 and WVOX.com, now broadcasting all over the world.
Good morning and welcome to, what a way to start a show. Welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education, and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, May 31st, 2012, the 71st day of spring. We have gained 1 minute of daylight since yesterday, 9 minutes since last we met 1 week ago. The sun rose at 5:26 this morning. It will set at 8:20 this evening. We will have 14 hours and 54 minutes of daylight today. So much daylight. The moon will rise at 4:05 this afternoon. It will set at 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. We are directly between first quarter and full moon. The next full moon is June 4th, which is Monday. Next high tides in New Rochelle at 7:52 p.m., in Yonkers at 6:25 p.m., Tarrytown 7:09 p.m., Haverstraw 7:35 p.m., and in Peekskill at 7:48 p.m. Now a regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Two officers were killed when their helicopter crashed on patrol in Cabell on May 28th. They are Captain John R. Brainerd, age 26, of Dover, Foxcroft, Maine, and Chief Warrant Officer 5, John C. Pratt, age 51, of Springfield, Virginia. Both men served us with the 12th Combat Aviation Brigade. CWO5 is the highest category of Chief Warrant Officer, so he's been with the Army a long time, undoubtedly. Also, Specialist Tofinga J. Tau Tolu, I gather he's Samoan from the name, age 23, from Wilmington, California. He was with the 4th Infantry Division, killed by a roadside bomb in Nangarhar Province on May 27th. Hospital Man Eric D. Warren, that's a Navy category. His age was unavailable for some reason. He's from Shawnee, Oklahoma, a Navy corpsman assigned to the 1st Marine Division. He was killed in action by a roadside bomb in Helmand Province on May 26th. Specialist Vilmar Galarza Hernandez, age 21, of Salinas, California, with the 2nd Infantry Division, killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar province on May 26th. Private First Class Kale C. Miller, age 23, of Overland Park, Kansas, with the 2nd Infantry also, who was killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar on May 24th. And finally, Corporal Keaton G. Coffey, age 22, of Boring, Oregon, 1st Marine Expeditionary Force, killed in combat in Helmand Province on May 24th. These 7 American servicemen were alive on the date of our last broadcast just 1 week ago. Memorial Day now has 4 more men to remember next Memorial Day, but don't wait that long, please, to remember our troops. They are dying pretty much every day, and those that are not killed are often seriously impacted, either physically or mentally. Back a couple of decades, a returned GI of my acquaintance who had fought in Vietnam said everyone comes back different. So even those who are not killed have issues. Think of them, too. Private First Class Miller, who was 23, and Corporal Coffey, of age 22, were killed on that date of our last broadcast just 1 week ago. Captain Brainerd and Warrant Officer Pratt were killed just this past Monday. And here we are broadcasting again about what is happening over there. Here we are overeating, overdriving, reveling in the American way of life. Even in these relatively sparse times, we often live to excess. These 7 died for our right to do that, for better or for worse. American men and women are at risk at this moment. Please don't forget that they are there. We would be nothing without them. We would have been overrun long ago. There are people waiting, licking their chops to grab a hold of America. And these people who are dying are the ones that are keeping us from that fate. War would be on American soil without them, so think of them, please. Each death is a great loss to their families and to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Well, this would be time for the Culture Corner, my reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, what have you. All of these are my opinions. You have the right to disagree with them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. However, excuse me, there is nothing to report today. A reminder, though, I am part of the cast of Neil Simon's Fools, which opens tomorrow night in Armonk. The play will run 6 performances over 2 weekends. For further information, if you'd like to come see me make a fool of myself or act a fool, because that's the role, log on to the Armonk Players or just Google Armonk Players and check out the schedule, travel directions, and be prepared to laugh. It's really funny. We have a great director, and it's going to be good. Okay, my first guest is Sarah B. Caldwell, my colleague here at WVOX. She's also a health inspector for Westchester County. Those of you who listened last week also will recall that Sarah was my co-host for that program. Is that frog in your throat? All right?
Oh, I'm getting over being sick.
Okay. Joining us from the chair right across the table from me, welcome Sarah B. Caldwell.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, it's my pleasure. So you are here. This is where we met, and you're here a lot, and you don't always cough that much.
No.
What I'd like to know, now you're a science person. That's what first.
Yeah, my background is in science.
We first talked about. Before we get into that, tell us about your job briefly as a health inspector for Westchester County.
Sure. I've been with them since April 2008, and currently I'm a sanitarian, which. When I first heard that title, I thought it meant like garbage collector, sanitarian, but
it sounds like
right. But no, it means essentially health inspector, public health sanitarian. And I've worked in the Bureau of Health Protection, and so kind of the environmental fields, actually going out and doing sampling and checking on different buildings and different things that are that affect public health on an everyday level.
Anything to do with restaurants or not?
No, really? I've never done restaurants. I've done practically everything but restaurants, camps, and beaches.
So if there is a problem that somebody identifies, they'll call the department and they'll dispatch you to see what the problem is.
Yeah, there's a complaint line and based upon what program it falls under. You know, I might go or someone else might go. So currently what I do is I'm a health inspector for tobacco compliance. So essentially I go out with a team and we just make sure that with a minor, we make sure that an establishment doesn't make sales to our minor.
So you try to entrap establishments.
Well, I do the work. Yeah. So.
So okay. So what you do is you test compliance, right?
Right. Yeah.
If you bring someone who's under, how old do you have to be? 18?
16 or 17. They're 16 or 17. You have to be 18 in order to purchase tobacco products.
So do you bring kids who just random kids, or do they really look their age, or do some of them, I mean, if they look 20, you just bring whoever they assign to you?
Yeah. I mean, they're paid through the health department, so they are 16, 17-year-olds. But
you know how old they are. But, like, if I'm a merchant, to be truthful, if I'm a merchant and I know you got to be 18 and a kid walks in who looks 20, I might just spare him the indignity of asking for ID. What does the law say? You have to ask anyone if there's any doubt whatsoever?
Yeah.
Because I've been asked at supermarkets when I bought beer.
Well, I believe supermarkets.
For ID. That was ridiculous.
Off topic. I think supermarkets are a different thing. I don't think it has anything to do with the health department.
No,
quite frankly,
no.
I think it has to do with marketing. That way they know what ages are people are buying, you know, products. But I've done that. I've also worked in the lead program doing inspections with low-income housing units and checking to see if there's lead-based paint. And then working with the tenants and the landlords to make sure that that's remedied. I've done West Nile virus, which involves catching mosquitoes, and then we sort them down to species and send them up to state to get tested for West Nile virus and for other mosquito diseases, mosquito-borne diseases. I also worked in the rabies department. So whenever you get a dog bite or if you get a bat in your house, I was on the side. Initially, when I got hired, was I'd be the person that would go and collect the specimens from the veterinary office for its take back and, again, to be sent to the state for testing. So I've certainly done many of the different environmental tasks that the health department has, and it's really been interesting to see, because I never knew that any of these existed until I actually got hired here.
Interesting. Okay, we're going to take a break, Sarah. So, but we'll be back in just a second. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. I am Bob Levinsohn. She is Sarah B. Caldwell. If you are listening in Boring, Oregon, Orient, Iowa, Orient City, Georgia, or Orient Point on Long Island, or Aimwell, Alabama, Clapper Gap, California, Frostproof, Florida, Norbonne, Lugati, or Munster, Indiana, you have logged on to www.wvox. You are listening live, and we'll be right back.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour, here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox Business Network, it's another down day for Wall Street. Disappointing reports on the U.S. economy are taking a toll on the markets. At 10 a.m. Eastern, the Dow is down about 50 points. On the flip side, shares of Talbots are soaring on news of a buyout deal. Sycamore Partners is buying the women's clothing retailer for $369 million, including debt. The deal is expected to close in the third quarter. And Liberty Media is taking a tough stance in its efforts to take control of SiriusXM Radio. Liberty plans to convert half of its preferred shares in the satellite radio broadcaster in a move that would give the company 32% of Sirius common stock. That's in addition to the common stock Liberty already agreed to buy. The company will then move to take control of SiriusXM's board. Liberty also filed a petition with the Federal Communications Commission to have the agency reconsider its May 4th decision rejecting the takeover. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Diane Macedo.
Hi, I'm a home. You know where your heart is? Don't worry, I know how you feel about me. That's why you need to get me flood insurance. If you get homesick after a few days, imagine how a flood would make you feel. Just a few inches of water can cost tens of thousands of dollars in damage. And homeowners insurance doesn't cover floods. But in moderate to low risk areas, flood insurance starts as low as $129 a year. Visit floodsmart.gov to learn how a flood could affect you.
We have ways of making you talk.
Well, okay, hotshot.
WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We're speaking with Sarah B. Caldwell. Sarah is, in addition to being a colleague of mine at WVOX, she's also a health inspector for the county of Westchester, and we were talking about her job. And you say that there were times that you have tested bats, or you've collected bats.
Collected bats. New York State Department of Health actually tests them.
So
we
do
send
you,
it to them.
Do you go out looking for bats, or do people call you? There are bats in their belfry or something?
Oh, people call. Yeah, we don't go out looking. If somebody has a bat in their house, then they'll call the health department.
Well, I captured a bat in my laundry room.
Okay.
maybe a year ago or so. And I put it in a plastic bag. I cut its wings off. It was alive. I kept it until it died, obviously. I wouldn't harm an animal like that. Once it died, I called it in, and they came and collected the specimen, sans wings. I kept the wings, and they tested it, and I got the word that it tested clean. It was not rabid, which I suspected, because you can usually tell a rabid animal, isn't that? Isn't that so?
No, not always.
Not always? I mean, if you see a raccoon in the middle of the day scratching at a tree and walking around in circles, it's either rabid or it got hit by a BB or something, right?
Yeah.
Something is wrong with it.
But bats, not so much. And I'm not really very well versed. I haven't been in that program for about 4 years. So,
now I've been scratched by squirrels and maybe bitten by squirrels, and I've called, and they say squirrels don't carry rabies. Is that so?
Squirrels. I don't know if squirrels can carry rabies, but I know that if the squirrel's getting attacked, it's most likely going to die from its injuries.
No, but a squirrel would bite me.
Right. But it needs to get rabies from some other creature. So probably in that attack, it would die.
Okay.
But, that's my day job. It's certainly not what I want to do. But
well, it sounds interesting, actually.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully it'll lead to a path where I will be able to use my communication skills more. But in the meanwhile, I'm doing double duty here at the station, as well as having... written stories at patch.com for it was close to 2 years, and being a sub editor for them, which was a great experience to interact with the community on such an intimate level and go out and cover stories and find stories, and it really helped me learn a lot about what people are interested in, what people deal with every day, and how certain stories are picked by editors versus others. I mean, my first job before the health department was being a biotech editor, and it was for a trade magazine. So essentially, this magazine that we put out was for the doctors and the researchers and the scientists that made all this bioengineered stuff that you talk about on your own show, and you know the pros and cons with that. But we had to pick and choose what most important bits of information were, what the latest, PCR assay was and why it would help them and whatever else. But I didn't really find that very interesting because I wasn't able to ask questions. As an editor, you have to make sure the copy is right, that it sounds, it sounds
theoretically
fine.
Editors sometimes just are butchers, but.
Yeah, sure, depending, right. And but I wanted to go out and actually ask the questions and find out, what was relevant.
So more of a reporter yourself.
Definitely, yeah, sure. But biotechnology wasn't really the audience that I wanted. And
so what is the specialty within science that especially lights your fire?
Science communications, because I feel like there are so many reporters in the media, but also scientists, dually, that either the scientists don't know how to properly communicate the research that they're doing in order to get the right grants or in order to reach out to their clientele, and vice versa. I feel like a lot of the media do a poor job at taking the most essential bits and pieces of a story and really running with it. There are a lot of people who don't have science backgrounds who are writing about science.
Coincidentally, my guest in the second half hour is George Musser, who is a senior editor and a writer for Scientific American magazine. It would be great if you could stick around, but unfortunately your day job beckons.
Yes.
So I'm sure we'll have much more to say about that. George is very well versed in science, and he's an excellent writer. So you'd probably approve of him.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But yeah, I know. There are also people writing about politics and various other subjects. who know very little about it. And people, of course, they call in on the radio and they pontificate about points
course,
of view.
Right.
That's different. That's talk radio.
They're pundits. That's
right.
What they do. Right.
Right. But when you actually write something and people read it, there's still a tendency when I read something to believe it, even though that's been disproven so many times that you really can't depend on it. But when I read something like the New York Times, Scientific American, Consumer Reports, when I read some of those respectable publications that have earned their respectability through years and years of vetting facts, then I'm okay. We read something on the internet, it's
right.
You may be yes, maybe no.
Yeah. And definitely one thing that I've learned over the past 3, 4, 5 years since being out of college, for sure, is that, you know, the facts are one thing, but you can twist them any way that you want. I mean, for instance, there's a story I remember. I worked for Digital Journal, and at the time I was overlapping with Patch. There was a story where we could talk about when an organization actually ran results. Like, say, for instance, an organization did some testing somewhere, and they did testing in May, right? Mm-hmm. But they sent it to another agency that verifies all the testing. Well, maybe they didn't send it for another couple of months, right? So now May goes until end of June, and then July was when they finally reported it. Well, we'll say, okay, this last agency made the release in July that so-and-so has problems, or this organization has problems, or this organization is losing money. But really, the first organization that collected everything held on to that data for the first, you know, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. And so really, you're kind of skewing, you know, it's funny how you can twist stuff just based upon how you phrase a story. And the same is true with science reporting, because you can, within, you know, reading a study that came out, if it was a white paper, if it was published in a journal, you know, that if that means that it's reproducible. That's the whole thing about science. Science is reproducible.
Exactly.
But a lot of times, you don't do enough vetting before you actually rewrite the story. So you hear all these, okay, miracle weight loss drugs, vitamins, and all this, you know, and there's something new every week, but then they can't reproduce it because they have a sample size of 7 or, you know, overweight women who are 375 pounds or, like, there's some weird constraint that when you actually read the story, well, you're like, why is this in the news in the first place?
That's either marketing or politics, but science.
But that's reporting on the end. Whether or not to report it, and how it's...
You, as a reporter, you are a scientist, really, basically, as a reporter. You're a scientist of the news, or you have to be factually correct.
Right.
I'm afraid we're out of time, Sarah. You will be back with us.
Yes, thank you so much.
As soon as we can possibly get you on. Thank you very much for being with us today. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with George Musser. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, in New York. If you're listening in Manly, Iowa, Holland, Kansas, or Scheveningen, Holland, Crummies, Dewstop, Drip Rock, Dwarf, 88, or Hanshu, Kentucky, or Brookline, Massachusetts, you have logged on to www.wvlx.com. You are listening live. I am Bob Lovensoul. This is Environmentally Sound, and we will be right back.
With world and national news 3 times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Ron Flatter. Kidnapped overnight, released today. 2 American men visiting Egypt were set free by members of a local tribe hours after they had been captured at gunpoint in the Sinai and after hours of negotiations.
The Bedouin were hoping to put pressure on the authorities to release a tribesman arrested on drugs charges. A kidnapping in the same area involving 2 American women in February ended pretty quickly too.
Fox News Radio's Emily Wither in Jerusalem. The Dow has lost nearly 58 points, weighed down mostly by machine maker Caterpillar, which has dealt all month with a work stoppage.
The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers has voted once again to reject Caterpillar's offer. They feel that they made concessions during a tough economic time, and so now the strike continues on.
Fox Business Network's Nicole Petalides on Wall Street. Caterpillar stock down nearly 4%. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Whitney Radio has some very good news for anyone who wants to keep their car looking like new after an accident. New Rochelle now has its very own high-tech modern body repair shop, and your car is in for a real treat. Laser Frame and Body Repair is the name of this spectacular new entity, and it's just around the corner from our radio stations on 74 Potter Avenue. Owner Martin Goldsmith's new Laser Frame and Body Repair is now open, specializing in foreign and domestic automobiles, and they're even an authorized Lexus repair shop. Laser Frame and Body Repair guarantees all work done to your car and offers free estimates, and they also make it easy for you with free pickup and delivery and 24-hour towing. So if your car needs some cleaning up after an accident, rely on Martin Goldsmith's new Laser Frame and Body Repair on 74 Potter Avenue in New Rochelle, just off 5th Avenue. They know the business, and they know how to get your car back on the road looking like new. The number is 914-632-8100, 632-8100. They take great pride in your car, and it shows. Laser Frame and Body Repair, now opened on Potter Avenue in New Rochelle.
Looking for a tail-wagging way to support the fight against cancer? Then leash up your pooch and join the American Cancer Society's Bark for Life on Sunday, June 10th at Lyndhurst in Tarrytown. Together, we'll create a world with less cancer and more barks by celebrating canine caregivers, remembering loved ones lost, and fighting back against cancer. Visit us at relayforlife.org/barkwestchesterny or call 914-397-8827. That's relayforlife.org/barkwestchesterny or 914-397-8827.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Our weather forecast for today, plenty of sunshine, our highs into the lower 80s, mostly clear tonight, nighttime readings in the upper 50s. And another fine day for Friday. It'll be mostly sunny tomorrow. Some afternoon clouds, likely highs in the upper 70s. Could be some rain or showers, possibly even some thunderstorms on Friday night. Nighttime lows in the lower 60s. Clouds in the morning, might be a leftover shower, then becoming partly sunny. Our high temperatures for the day Saturday in the upper 70s. Sunday's weather, mostly sunny, mid-70s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
So when do you listen?
All the time.
Night, day, and in between.
We're always here for you. VOX.
WVOX.
We are back. You are listening to Environmentally Sound on WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle in New York. My next guest is George Musser. He's a science writer and editor, senior editor for Scientific American magazine. George's specialty actually is physics and cosmology. But his article, the article of his that caught my attention was How Life Arose on Earth and How a Singularity Might Bring It Down. So those of you who have no interest in that, or who just want to talk about local politics, you should probably find something else to do right now. But this caught my eye. We were finally able to sync up. This was months ago. So speaking to us from Varick Street in Manhattan, welcome, George Musser.
Thanks, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good morning, George. First of all, I'd like to know, is there a difference in the online Scientific American? Is the same material as in the print version? What is the difference between the two?
Well, there's a lot of overlap in the content between the two, but they are unique content on either side as well. So it's like a Venn diagram with a kind of a bit of overlap in the middle.
Oh, cool. Is the overlap 80%, 60%, 2%?
Oh, God, I don't really know. I mean, the Scientific American Monthly magazine is focusing really on longer-term questions, things that will have some value by the time you get it a few months later. So we tend to strip out some of the news stories, the things that are in the fast and go cycle of science news.
Okay, but if you're citing the Venn diagram, shouldn't you really know the percentages? Or am I being too hard on you?
You're being a little hard on me. I should keep up with this, but you know we all have our domains. We're trying to just cycle as fast as we can.
Okay, well your primary focus is space science, string theory, quantum mechanics. Your degree is electrical engineering and mathematics at Brown and planetary science at Cornell, where you gained some honors. So you are well-vetted as far as I'm concerned. You're also the author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to String Theory. Now, I've read articles on string theory. I've wanted to learn it, and I've read simple three-page articles in perhaps even your magazine, which purported to really explain it. and I still don't quite understand it. Do you think that The Complete Idiot's Guide to String Theory would help me, or can you actually explain to me and our listeners what string theory is in 5 minutes?
Well, obviously, I think the book would help, but I can also take a crack at trying to explain it.
Please do.
On the air, too. And actually, some of the issues you brought up with Sarah in the earlier part of the discussion I'd like to come back to as well.
Of course.
Anyway, let me go on to string theory.
Sure.
So the idea is, if you zoom in on particles, tiny particles, so electrons, protons, neutrons, all the particles that make up our bodies.
So we're already subatomic.
Right, exactly.
Okay, good.
So maybe I should back up a second. Everything we know is made of elements, chemical elements, which are in turn made up of atoms. The atoms, in turn, are made up of subatomic particles.
Okay.
So then the question is, what are the subatomic particles made up of? And the proposition of string theory is that if you zoom in on them, they look like tiny little vibrating strings, little loops of energy, essentially.
So each particle is a single string?
Each particle would be a single string, exactly. So an electron would be one, a quark, which is one of the particles inside a proton, would be another, a neutrino would be a third, and so forth and
but
so
okay,
on.
Okay, but I realize this is, I hate to interrupt your
no,
train of thought.
No, please interrupt, it's good.
But my thought is that as soon as you get smaller than an atom, you're dealing with energy and not matter. So a string would be matter, wouldn't it? Or is there such a thing as an energy string?
Essentially, those differences are beginning to blur and become energy and matter and mass are beginning to shade into one another when you get down to this level. So the honest answer is, though, that no one really knows what the string is made of. So this is one of those cases of you just have to take your knowledge one level deeper in the hopes that it will then answer the questions, and then you can ask what the string is made of and continue that going on. But here's the beauty of string theory. That we have just this huge number of types of particles. You know, there's just so many of them. But there's only one type of string. And all the different particles are the different vibrations of that string. So it's sort of like a guitar or a violin or other musical string. You pluck it and a certain note comes out, and you pluck it a different way or hold the string a different way and change the vibrational pattern. You get a different note.
You either tighten it or shorten it.
Exactly. So the one string on an instrument is capable of playing just a huge variety of notes and hence a huge amount of music.
Okay.
Same thing with these physics strings.
Okay.
They are able to play, in a sense, a huge variety of particles. And what's nice about this is that it's a way to unify all we understand about particles. All the, you know, the different kinds of particles, unify them under this rubric of the string. And there's all sorts of other interesting implications of string. It may lead to new forms of matter that we don't even observe in our world. It may make predictions for things we've no idea of. And that's the beauty of physics, is it really opens our minds to a whole new, literally a whole new universe that's out there.
Are you a fan of the Big Bang Theory? I don't mean the actual theory, I mean the TV show.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about this at this physics conference I've been at the past couple months, and what do we think of the Big Bang Theory? I've only seen it a couple times, and I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Some people hate it because it's a little too close to the truth, and some people like it. So it's,
well, Neil deGrasse Tyson has appeared as a guest, so it can't be all bad, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and so has Stephen Hawking.
And everybody. Yeah, actually, he was on when I was out in Santa Barbara this time, so that occasioned a little bit of humor, and actually showed a picture of his appearance and a presentation I gave, so that got a lot of laughter. So, you know, physicists are able to laugh at themselves like we all are. I think it's part of a healthy, you know, human existence that we have. We're able to kind of have some perspective on ourselves.
Okay, let's leave string theory for now, because we could chew up the rest of the time easily and not get too far. First of all, are you aware of this new book, The Book of Universes, by John D. Barrow?
Not this particular one. I know John Barrow.
Do you?
I like his prior works on this. I'm sure this is a wonderful book as well, but I haven't read it.
I'm reading it, and they'd like me to interview him. I believe he's in England.
He is.
I think it's a 2011, or is it a 2012? It's a 2011 book. Anyway, it's called The Book of Universes, Exploring the Limits of the Cosmos. So far, quite interesting. Okay, so now, the reason that I actually contacted you in the first place was your article called How Life Arose on Earth and How a Singularity Might Bring It Down. Now, the religious people in our audience are saying, well, of course, how life arose on Earth, God put it here. And what the hell is a singularity anyway? I mean, who knows that? Do we? I know of one that would be in a black hole. And first of all, let me ask you a very what seems like a simple question, and that should take us to the break. How did life arise on Earth?
Oh, it's such a simple question. You might as well ask me how does space and time arise as well. I mean, these are really the deepest questions in modern science.
Listen, I'm asking the question, so you answer it. How?
Oh yeah.
How did life arise?
Here, aren't I? Of course, one thing you learn in science is really how to ask questions in a productive way. It's less about the answer than about the question. And just to go back a moment before I talk about some of the theories of the origins of life to the religion.
Yes.
Issue that you alluded to. Uh-huh. I don't think there's any contradiction at all. Personally, if someone is, I'm not a religious believer, but if someone is, then they should ask, well, how did it happen? So science is trying to fill in the how and understand this in a deeper way, which I think suits every religion.
Well, religious people think that God created man just the way we are, and we evolutionists have quite different take on that.
True. There's also a huge variety of religious belief. But my point is simply that there's nothing anti-religious in trying to understand our deepest roots. I think
okay,
if you are religious, then it would fit into that.
Are you avoiding the question of how life arose on Earth?
You only have about two minutes left.
Actually,
there I am doing that. So the model that I talked about in that particular post that you're mentioning was finding a continuity between the geology and the geochemistry of our planet and life. Essentially, the idea is that life is a kind of an encapsulation of the kinds of geochemical reactions that took place on our planet before life arose. So, in other words, there's not a sharp break, life, not life. And the basic chemistry that's going on is a disequilibrium between the interior of the Earth, which is more hydrogen, and the exterior of the Earth, which is carbon dioxide. And when you bring those two together, and you have some catalyst or able to react the two, you'll get methane.
But you said life, not life, are really very close?
The kinds of reactions we have in our body, the kind of oxidation-reduction reactions we have in our body, are essentially just a sped-up and catalyzed version of the reactions that take place naturally, inorganically.
Okay, let me just, I'm going to quote one thing of yours, then we're going to take a break and we'll
definitely
come back. The one thing from your article is the purpose of life is to hydrogenate carbon dioxide.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you about that.
Yes, please do.
You are listening to AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. This is Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levinsohn. My guest is George Musser. And we will be right back.
National news 3 times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on
Fox News Radio. I'm Paul Stevens. The U.S. economy slowing, new jobless claims rising last week.
They went up to 383,000 last week. The estimate was 370, which was also the reading last week.
Fox Business Network's Connell McShane. The first quarter GDP number growing by 1.9% less than original estimates. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton calling for more action from Russia to end the ongoing violence in Syria.
It's the top news across Russia today. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton taking Moscow to task for refusing to support UN actions on Syria, saying the Kremlin's inaction could lead to a civil war.
Fox Radio's Jessica Gallagher in Moscow. Russian officials saying Moscow will not bend to international pressure. Two American tourists kidnapped in Egypt by armed Bedouins now have been released. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Cohen Gauss. This highly regarded regional firm handles matrimonial law and difficult family issues like separation, divorce, alimony, custody, and reconciliation, and is widely known for the caring personal interest and compassion its highly skilled attorneys bring to this most sensitive area of the law. Berman, Bavero, Fruco, and Gauss, located in the heart of downtown White Plains in the Clarence Rappelier Building at 123 Main Street. The firm is led to this day by managing partner Henry Berman, a former chairman of the family law section of the prestigious New York State Bar Association. For a confidential consultation about matrimonial matters and family law issues, you're invited to call Berman, Bavero, Fruco, and Gauss, a professional corporation of highly qualified lawyers handling matrimonial law in White Plains at 123 Main Street, 914-997-7100. The Westchester law firm with the statewide reputation, Berman, Bavero, Fruco, and Gauss, 914-997-7100.
Wherever you listen.
In the shower.
I listen to it all the time. I listen at work, in my car, when I get up.
Thanks for keeping it here. WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX.
We are back. We're speaking with George Mercer. Welcome, George. You back?
Definitely here.
You back with us, George?
I am.
Okay, good. At the break, I just suggested a topic which you are going to now address. That is, the purpose of life is to hydrogenate carbon dioxide. Would you care to elaborate on that statement?
I'm obviously talking about the purpose of life in a very kind of physics reductionist chemist kind of way. We can all ascribe different meanings to our lives.
If you're looking at Earth from another planet and you're just looking and trying to determine what all life does and how that keeps Gaia, let us say, vital and alive, I guess that's really a good one. So go ahead.
So this is just, there's a lot of schools on how life arose and indeed what life is. This is one of them. It's not the only one, so I just want to have that disclaimer out there as one should always do in science reporting of any sort. This is a kind of a metabolism-first idea of life in which the chemical reactions in our bodies, the idea is that the chemical reactions in our bodies in a cellular level are basically mimicking or a sped-up version of natural inorganic geochemical reactions that took place even prior to life being on Earth. And as you say, as you look on the Earth, maybe from a distant planet with a telescope, what would you see? You'd see a state of chemical disequilibrium. So the constituents of the Earth, the chemical elements that make it up, molecules that make it up, in this case really hydrogen and carbon dioxide, are not in equilibrium with one another. They want to react and create, for instance, methane. But they can't directly do that. There's different intermediate steps they have to go through that are difficult and require an input of energy before the energy is then released.
And that's where serpentinization comes in.
Right. So serpentinization is an example of a geologic, like inorganic reaction, or usually inorganic, it also can take place organically, inorganic reaction that can bring this about. It's fairly slow and it requires certain kinds of materials. Living organisms of the type we have on, of the type that we have on Earth, are another mechanism. They're faster than the serpentinization reaction. So the proposition was, and this is really promoted by Michael Russell, who's at NASA, Caltech JPL, out in California, is that life started as this inorganic reaction, but there was other reactions just happened to occur that were a bit faster, so they became dominant, and various structures were co-opted by them, and those became cellular membranes, for example, that allowed a little pocket of these reactions to occur. And then eventually Darwinian evolution kicked in and brought us to where we are today. So, again, as I said at the beginning, it's kind of an idea that there's a continuity between the inorganic, the not life, and the organic, the life.
And according to this article also, life probably could have and possibly even did arise separately. Had this line not... That we are experiencing, that we're part of, not happened, another one would have and maybe did.
Probably did. I mean, the deep, deep, deep roots of the tree of life are probably the sprawling root system that there are multiple origins in different parts of the world, and they eventually began to overlap and one prevailed, or maybe they were somehow merged, and our life, subsequent life reflects that.
So theoretically, although I don't think this is actually the case, but theoretically, chimps could have arisen in Africa, orangutans could have originated in Sumatra and in Asia separately, and they did not necessarily evolve together.
Right. Of course, that's the general idea. Of course, that what I'm talking about occurred billions and upon billions of years before we get to the primate lineage, and there's a whole other set of issues that come up with when we start talking about animals of that sort. I'm really talking about at the molecular level, before even DNA in this case, and according to this theory,
so this is geologic evolution before it got to biologic evolution?
Right. And then all the complexity that we have in the biological organisms around us, the incredible range of organic molecules that we rely on, that really came later. It was kind of an overlay on top of this more fundamental hydrogenating carbon dioxide, as you said in that original quote.
Okay, we could delve, but again, we run out of time, and a couple of things I definitely want to touch on. First of all, singularity. Now, the basic singularity that I've heard of is what happens in a black hole where the laws of physics just cease to exist. You want to briefly define singularity and then address how a singularity might bring life to an end.
So, yeah, the idea of this technological singularity actually was inspired by the singularity in the so-called space-time singularity inside a black hole, the surface of a black hole. And the idea is that there's just some break where what happened, for instance, if you fall into a black hole, God forbid, and you will hit the singularity in the center and you will die. The laws of physics will break down there, and those laws are necessary for your existence.
Right.
But a lot of people speculated that new laws of physics or something new will then happen. And likewise, the technological singularity that people, and I can define that in a second, but the metaphor at least is that the laws will change, the laws that govern our world will change as much as the laws change when you falling into a black hole hits.
So how would that be?
Well, the idea is, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but let me just present the idea, is that there's such an accelerating pace of technological change, and it begins to feed on itself. And it gets more and more and more frenetic, and is faster and faster and faster. And, for instance, there's evolution of intelligent computers, and then the intelligent computers can make themselves more intelligent, and they just get into a loop and go faster and faster. And it eventually reaches just a break point where everything that came before is almost just irrelevant to what comes after, and a whole new world will dawn.
But you're not saying that computers can develop intelligence and take over, are you?
That's essentially, no, that is what this is arguing, that the computers will take over, or somehow we will become them. But the point being is that there's going to be, according to this model, according to this proposition, a break, that around the mid-21st century, at the rate things are going, that there will be this accelerating progress, which we already see around us, will just reach its break point, and the whole new world will then dawn, presumably run by some kind of artificial intelligence.
Really?
That's the proposition. I think there's a lot of issues with it, personally. I think it's interesting. I think there will eventually be sentient computers. I think that's where things are going.
Really? Using a biological brain?
Using the silicon brain, using just a computer, and you could either literally simulate a human brain inside a computer, or you could create something that's altogether quite different from a human brain inside a computer.
You said sentient, though.
I agree with the singularity people on that. Where I disagree with them is I think they're focusing on one type of technological improvement, computers, software. And we all know that there's plenty of other kinds of technology that don't increase at this exponential rate. Just the technology to feed people or to cure diseases, these things don't go so fast. In fact, sometimes they go backwards. So though we may have sentient computers, I don't think it'll be such a game changer as the singularity people might think.
Okay, we only have a couple of minutes, and I'm committing to getting you back on, George, because there's so much more to do. But in the meantime, you did say that you wanted to comment on something that Sarah said. Would you like to do that?
Yeah, actually, and that's a good way to we can talk about this and bring it up next time, perhaps.
Okay, sure.
The question is, what do you believe what you read in the newspaper? And I just want to say that even Scientific American, we're very careful in what we do, most of what we write is probably wrong. And this is just the nature of science. Science is always progressing, but what we publish today will be proved wrong in a year. It's just our best guess, best educated, informed guess about the way the world is. And I don't think when you read Sign of America, New York Times, any of these outlets, that you should believe what we have. I think you should use it as a starting point for your own thinking and so forth. So I don't think the word believe, that was actually really what I was reacting to at kind of the end of your conversation. Don't believe what you read anywhere, News of the World or Scientific American. You should just assess it and go with it and put that into your own.
Okay, but if there's any truth at all, you have to go with that which you believe is true at this moment.
True. And there's certain facts that you'll just have to take, for instance, that there's climate change and so forth, and then go from those facts that there is evolution and then move forward from them. So you don't want to revisit things that are
right,
already settled.
Right, the sun does rise in the east. It does.
Exactly.
I know that. I've watched it many times, and it always comes up, not exactly in the same place as a 23.5-degree variation from the equator, but more or less.
Yes, and don't forget next Tuesday is the transit of Venus. If you miss it, you'll have to wait to another 105 years.
Oh.
So that's an example of a thing we can't predict extremely accurately. I just was reacting to, I don't want people to read Sign of America and just take it as gospel truth. It's not. It's just the best guess. It's
very
where
good.
where we are today. It's the best
very
we
good.
Can do, and it will change.
Okay, we're going to leave it there, George. It's been fascinating. I will definitely call you in the near future, and we'll have you back on for
definitely.
Sure.
Definitely. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Bye now.
I would like to thank Sarah B. Caldwell and George Musser for joining us on Environmentally Sound this morning. Sarah will likely join us again if her work schedule gets right in the future, and George will definitely join us in the future, in the near future. She is a fine addition. Sarah is a fine addition to the WVOX team. George Musser is actually a science writer. It differs from being a scientist who writes because George chronicles the science and does not actually perform it. Thereby, he gets the best of both worlds without getting his hands dirty. He gets to write, which is his talent, and he gets to learn about state-of-the-art science, which is great, and he actually gets paid to do it. Some people are really lucky in that way. I also, just in this chair, get to learn an awful lot about science and many other subjects that I would not if I did not have this particular position. So, again, thank you to Bill O'Shaughnessy and Don Stevens for all that you do. Our thought for the week, turn on, tune in, drop out. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the U.S. of A., perhaps even the world. Next up, I don't know. I don't see Howard Sturman. I only know if I see him. But hopefully it will be Howard because he's a stimulating gentleman. I am Bob Lebensold, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens, off to Seattle and Alaska. John Harper will be filling in for me in 2 weeks. I will join him on the phone from Seattle for part of that program. Then back 2 weeks after that when summer is richly upon us. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. I will see you in 4 weeks. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.